My new book, Facts That Aren't True, is out now. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions. Click the link in the description now.
What do you feel would qualify as provable evidence for a creator besides the actual speaking to the creator?
Pretty hard to say. I would, one problem I think is that if the creator is outside our domain, then I think it's probably fundamentally unknowable. That's why I'm an agnostic atheist. But you know, there's also, it sounds like a cop-out answer, but it really isn't. And you just said creator, you didn't specialize it in any way. But if there's supposedly some sort of perfect, omni-being out there, then that being knows exactly how to prove that it exists, and it clearly hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. No, I didn't specify. I went creator. I'm pantheist, so I don't affiliate to a particular deity. I just believe in a creator. I don't really know how to feel about which one. So them existing outside of our domain, so do you then believe that there exists a metaphysical universe, then there is something outside of our physical universe?
No, I don't believe that.
So okay, so you don't believe in something that exists outside of our physical domain, but if there was a creator, they would have to exist outside of our domain.
Yeah, almost certainly, yeah.
Okay, those seem kind of contradicting then.
No, because I didn't say it doesn't exist. I said I don't believe in it.
Okay, then, let's... So, okay. You don't believe in another, the domain outside of our universe existing if a deity were to exist.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that have you ever heard of the book Logic, Truth, and, or Knowledge, what is it called? Language, Knowledge, and Truth. What the fuck? I'm literally reading this book. Language, Truth, and Logic. Yeah.
Language, Truth, and Logic.
Yeah, it's by his name is A.J. Ayer, and he was particularly influenced by this group of scientists and philosophers. They called themselves the Vienna Circle, and they pushed forward this idea of like logical positivism, and they were really big on verificationism. And a lot of them kind of thought that metaphysics might just be complete nonsense. And
I would agree.
I think a lot of it is pretty persuasive, because if you make the claim that like something, I think that verification principle's really powerful, because if you can't validate or substantiate or support a claim with anything, then it's just a tautological, completely useless claim. Now, but that wouldn't account to like logical claims or like mathematical claims. But those aren't supposed to represent something real. They are meant only to represent something abstract. And if God or whatever, or heaven really exists in a different realm, I think it's just completely, it's just not a useful claim.
Yeah, I
articulated that very poorly, but like I said, I just started.
No, it's okay. I got the gist.
Reading it.
it sounds like it's from a Scotsman as well. So I agree. I don't really believe in the metaphysical universe. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because there, it would kind of make it confusing for our universe to exist. Then why does our universe have the laws that it does if there is a space where these laws that clearly can't apply because it's outside of? But going back, I want to try and stay on that creationism as best as I can. I'm known for tangents. Everybody I talk to is always tangent this and that. So I think the best way I can articulate then would be to do with, do you see any logic to the formation of sentiency?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that.
So we can agree that sentiency is somewhat unique to particular organisms on this planet. Yeah, like plant cells, we don't determine them to have sentiency to the extent that humans do.
Yeah, I'm fine with
do
that.
Do you see logic? Do you see logic in why there is a difference in those things? Because, I mean,
Between sentient and non-sentient things?
Yeah, do you see logic in not having sentiency?
Oh. So, I think... I don't want to say this. To me, the way I think about it is what fundamentally makes life a little bit different, especially from this sentience lens or whatever, is that living thing... This is funny because I got this idea from reading... I did some research on... I was doing like debunking episodes for this podcast I have. I was going over debunked scientific ideas of the past. And yeah. One was on what's called like the vital essence, which was oftentimes called the soul. And what philosophers like, I think Aristotle and a few others argued was that living things are internally driven... and that's what makes them fundamentally unique. And I actually really like that because an inanimate object is... I used to actually have a pretty good way of putting this, but I never like wrote it down and I never talk about it. So this will probably come out pretty poor. But inanimate objects are literally only... They only change by virtue of their environment exerting forces upon them. That's it. Yeah, except for like... nuclear decay, I guess, is technically it's technically internal, I suppose. Whereas living things, whereas living things, yes, they are absolutely affected by the environment, but they also have internal drives and causes that cause them to affect themselves and their external environment, which I think is a pretty cool and useful distinction, because if we were going to discover some form of life somewhere else in the universe, it may not be biological in any kind of sense that we can understand it. But if it does that, then that's, I think that would be indicative of some form of life. Now, with regard to sentience, clearly I think that human beings are sentient, and that's because I'm meta-aware and I can make that claim. But what is it boiled...
You have the ability to make a choice.
Yeah, but what is it boiled down to? Well, I think it... If I were going to try to word it or whatever, I would say it's going to have to come from what I was talking about a little bit ago, because what a living thing does is it... I guess it kind of ultimately rests in the ability to react to stimuli in your environment and then produce some sort of action to it. Now, that doesn't mean, like, how do I say it? Like, literally...
Okay, so reductionist then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, a phosphorescent mineral, like, in a way does that, because when light hits it, it will phosphoresce a different color or fluoresce a different color, whatever. But I don't think that's the same. And again, I'm literally just thinking out loud, so I don't have a sophisticated way to put it, but there we go.
Yeah, it is interesting because, I mean, I don't go to the extent that you do. I mean, I'm only bloody 24 and I've got a kid, so I'm exhausted most of the time. I ain't got the ability to read a whole lot. I used to read, but it's gone out the window. I'm now kids books all the time. But back to it. So I like to I find it logical to interpret sentiency from the ability to make choices and preference.
Sure.
So it's not necessarily just those internal drives, because if you have two situations that can result in an equal amount of, let's call it pleasure, like if I were to eat a hamburger or a hamburger with cheese, but I have absolutely no preference to whether I want the hamburger with cheese or not, and it's going to cost me nothing, I'm hip fit, so I don't need to worry about the calories. It's those kinds of things. It's about being able to exert a preference all of a sudden, because as I said, like I've got cats, and if I gave my cats bloody two different flavored pouches, they aren't going to have that same level of preference. I could throw all of the pouches out there, salmon, chicken, turkey, beef, and they would just eat them all. It's that level of sentiency, because they can, animals can experience emotions, but we can, it's preference that I think we could stem from, because in the way I understand it, preference doesn't necessarily have logic 100% of the time, and I like to pick at the things that just aren't 100% repeatable, because those are the ones that you can unpick. You can't unpick something that's 100% repeatable. So then now it's the about the logic of not possessing sentiency. So why is it that why am I struggling right now? Eukaryotes and prokaryotes. Why is it that prokaryotes never developed sentiency, or did not develop sentiency the same way that we, as coming from eukaryotics?
Well, they're not complex enough, I would say, to do that. I mean, you could, like, in theory, you could build a computer that can do what modern computers do with vacuum tubes, you know, but it would just, it's so impractical, and it would take so much energy and be so huge that it's not going to happen, but like in theory it could. But, you know, for a prokaryote, they just literally lack the complexity to be able to do it. But I don't think that they lack it, because I'm pretty sure there are unicellular organisms that, I'm not 100% sure about bacteria, but they have spots on their cell membranes that are photosensitive. So it's not an eye, but it's like what an eye does. It's sensitive to light.
Yeah.
So if you're in the ocean, if you're a unicellular organism just out in, it's not even the ocean, but we'll just say the ocean, UV light will degrade and destroy your DNA. So if they have that, it allows them to react to sunlight and not decide in any kind of way, but react to it and go down deeper into the water where there's less UV light, and then stay there. And that's just an innate survival reflex. But I mean,
yeah, that's self-preservation.
Just because we talk about them doesn't mean that we aren't necessarily just biological robots with innate biological reflexes too. And then they come up closer to the surface when the sun is not out or whatever. So I think they do that kind of thing. It's just less sophisticated.
Sophistication then. Well then bringing it into the comparison of humans then, because so if we were to, so complexity and their, so oh my god, I keep repeating myself, do apologize. So plants are too simple to possess sentiency. The energy requirements just aren't appropriate. However, we can observe large we have large areas that are technically just one big old plant.
Pando in Utah.
Yeah, it's just one large plant.
Yeah,
and now we're able to see that plants are capable of maximizing their ability to absorb energy via photosynthesis and therefore an uptake of nutrients.
Yeah. Well, they communicate with other plants too. They've been able to find, and this happens because of a symbiotic relationship with fungi, but they've found that if two trees that are next to each other and they share a mycelium network with their root system, if one tree, and even if they're different species, if one tree...
No, mycelium are eukaryotic, not prokaryotic.
Yeah, but you were talking about trees just a little bit ago, right?
Yeah, trees as in prokaryotics.
No, prokaryotes are bacteria and archaea.
Why am I bugging? What's...
Plants and animals would be...
Oh my god, I'm bugging, aren't I? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would say, and like, it doesn't matter because everything I've said is relevant to each of those.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
But no, plants. What they've found is that when a bug, or I don't know if they've done this with fire, but they've done it with bugs, when some sort of like bark beetle or whatever invades one plant, it releases. I don't know what the chemicals are, but it can travel through the mycelium network and then go to a neighboring tree, even if it's of a different species. And that tree can do things like secrete excess sap that will ward off the bug. So they have what we would call an immune system response, essentially, built within them that can actually be communicated to other members, which is pretty remarkable. And I think that that's a kind of sentience.
Okay. I would do my little scare tactic to get rid of the hiccups, but I don't think it would work through the great old internet. It's troublesome though, because again, so I'm not saying you have to do that, but it's like, again, I come to that preference because... the idea of sentiency in that idea, I can't. You're not wrong. However, what I'm hearing is more self-preservation driven and external factors. I don't want to have my little bubble invaded. I don't want to have threats to my well-being. Therefore, this is the reaction that I'm going to have. I am aware of the stimulus,
and
this is my reaction.
I thought that's what compatibilism was when something acts in according with its own desires. So if we're allowed to attempt to describe free will in that sense, then I actually don't really see how a plant doing that is not kind of the same thing. Now you can say because a plant lacks a mind, it doesn't even have desires. And it's like, well, I mean, whatever.
Not necessarily mind, because mind is very tricky, I think. I mean, we could have the whole argument of where does the soul exist and where does life exist? Brainstem death, heart stop beating, what do we go on with? But it's the preference, because my anecdote was to do with the fact that I would make a choice based on no other information, regardless. I'm a fit person. I don't need to worry about calories. I don't need to worry about money. I've got a burger and I've got a cheeseburger. Which one am I going to pick? The one that I prefer, purely prefer. I'm going to get some illogical kind of reaction because I'm not going to enjoy it. I'm just going to have some weird affiliation that I'm going to choose the burger with cheese on it because who knows what. I've just got this weird thought in.
You're just a goofy guy like that.
Exactly, just feeling goofy. And I'm like, how can plants be goofy then? How can we... let's take it a step back. How can we observe a plant being goofy? It's really tricky to do that, because then I'm here thinking, because it all just seems very much we have 99% of organic life being purely self-preservation driven. And I agree, most things are self-preservation. I think a lot of religion was actually based in self-preservation and it was created for the purposes of. But I'm still struggling with the logic of not possessing sentiency, not possessing a preference. Does that make sense?
I mean, kind of. You're just saying the plant doesn't have preferences, I suppose.
Not that it doesn't have preference. We can't, I don't know how to determine a plant showing its preference.
Sure.
But, like,
well, I mean,
can we say that?
I mean, they grow up to reach more sunlight and compete with other plants.
That's self-preservation, because growing up means they get more light, they get the energy, and okay, that's self-preservation. That's what I mean. It's so tricky because I'm not saying it. I've got the answer, but it's so like, how do we observe a preference in something that we can't understand completely, and then how do we determine the logic of possessing a preference? It doesn't have any internal drives.
Well, I am uniquely unqualified to answer that for you. Sorry, we did about 20 minutes there, so I'm gonna have to get to the other people that are waiting. But it was fun.
I appreciate it.